Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. With us again is Deanna Sar Sarah 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 Sarah
There.
Sarah. Okay, I'm bad at last names. And maybe the next president of the United States. She is running for president, and for God's sakes, we need a change. The American Democrats and Republicans are just murdering the country off. That's obvious enough. And today we're going to talk about the insane clown posse, otherwise known as the administration and the people around it. So over under, is Donald Trump playing 50-50D chess, or is he losing a 1D checkers? I'm thinking insane, or is he wily as a fox?
Well, a friend of mine said we could call it three dementia chess, perhaps.
That's a good one. I got to remember that one. I'll steal
Sure, that's
that
fine. I mean, I just stole it, so it's fine. If the shoe fits, that's what they say. I think it's very disconcerting, and I was watching Lieutenant Colonel Danny Davis on his series of podcasts in response to Trump's various posts on Truth Social. First saying, well, we've destroyed everything, the war is going to end. Then he sends 1 hour later, I'm giving Iran 48 hours, and if they don't open the Strait of Hormuz, we're going to blow up all their power plants, starting with the biggest one. That, of course, was very alarming. And Davis said, there's got to be some people talking about the 25th Amendment, which is where you remove a president who's not capable of holding office. The tricky thing about that is the vice president is the major player in that. And I don't think J.D. Vance is particularly enthusiastic about the war, but I don't, if you go for the 25th Amendment and you fail, because you have to have a majority, so at least eight cabinet members. And then if Trump disputes it, it goes to the Congress, and then you have to have over 50% of the Congress. So if you go for the 25th Amendment and you fail, then everybody with any sense will be purged. And then what are we left with? And I think, frankly, the American population has to really rise up. They've got to find the moral fitness to survive. Now, I say that because then now all this changed at 7:30 this morning. President Trump put out another post saying he's pleased to report the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations. We're going to have a complete cessation of hostilities. Therefore, I'm postponing blowing up their power plants for 5 days.
But
Now,
what did
go
Iran
ahead.
say in the return? You blow up our power plants, we wipe out everything with everybody. And by the way, we never had
Exactly.
any talks. So.
Right. No, it's really dangerous. And if you take the pattern, then what one would expect is sometime in the middle of the 5 days is the US will start bombing, because that's what we did in the other two sets of negotiations. So it's dangerous beyond belief. You have, I'm imagine, President Putin, Xi Jinping, other senior statesmen in the world who have cooler heads in intense discussions to try and figure out how to resolve this. And then I thought it was very promising. I don't know if you saw what the foreign minister of Oman put forward in the middle of this as a regional solution. Did you happen to catch that?
No, I missed that. What did he say?
Well, it makes total sense, because what he said, and it's obvious, you cannot, at this point, there would be no point in a bilateral US-Iran discussion. Why would Iran ever trust anything the United States ever said? Right, you can't. So you need a regional agreement, which is based on the right of every nation to have nuclear energy. And what Iran was in the course of agreeing to in the negotiations was actually really diluting their enriched uranium to simply, fuel level. I think this is quite doable, and it's the only way that it would work. If you don't have a solution concept on the table, and when I spoke yesterday with Helga Zeplarush about it, she said, well, by regional, you have to go all the way from India to the Nile River to the Caucasus. That everyone's secure. You're not going to end this without
Oh, yeah.
addressing the Palestine situation. In other words, you really have to take the whole region into account and say, well, gee, what you really need is to develop nuclear power. You can't be dependent on fossil fuels, and you need rail transport corridors like the North-South transport corridor that Putin has been talking about. It would have to be in that domain. So you might say, well, is anyone in the United States smart enough to understand this? That's a question. And it's also a question if you look at the region and Tony Blair's role from when he was prime minister to the present, what were the British trying to do? They always wanted to blow up this region because it is the linking point between Eurasia, Africa, and Europe. And in a sense, that's more important than the petroleum, because if you got that transport corridor functioning, you would have a spectacular increase in productivity, right, in the region, in the world, and the British Empire on its little island over there would not be that important. So are they deploying? Tony Blair inserted himself with the Kushner-Witkoff team. He's
That goes, yes.
very involved, and his right-hand man, Jonathan Powell, and there are Epstein ties there as well. So they are there to sabotage it. And Trump, because he is so profilable because of his narcissism and mental frailty, I'll put it that way, is going to end up being used as a hand grenade to blow up the world economy and sabotage this.
Well, I think I basically already have. I mean, the repercussions haven't hit quite yet, but they're starting to. It's that, the tide's gone out. Let's go collect some seashells. So for some reason, there's a big black thing coming toward us. Russia. Oh, that's called a tidal wave. That's Europe's about to be swamped. No gas. I mean, they're losing their 50% or almost 50% of natural gas. Russia's out. Qatar's out. Oil's gone for the most part, except for the U.S. can sell at high at the highest possible prices. And fertilizer, it's
Right,
planting season.
exactly.
It's already planting season in Southern Europe. So we're
Right.
looking at what, 50% yield cut? That
Yes, and
means
that's,
starvation.
I have to say, this is one of the weaknesses of the so-called post-industrial economy, because no one knows what goes into production anymore. For those of us, particularly in the United States, because Germany at least has had industry until recently, but Americans have no clue. They think you go online and you press a button and you order it on Amazon and it shows up at your door. So that there's
Oh,
a
it doesn't
truck
work
that,
that way?
yeah, right.
What?
I'm
What?
sorry, I hate to break it to you.
What's the supply chain? It's the guy that brings the Amazon order.
Right, exactly. So if your bridges collapse, if you don't have petroleum, if you don't suddenly everything grinds to a halt, and as you're saying, absolutely, you cannot just, oh, we're going to start again. No, because the pipeline is empty, and to gear it up again could take months or even years in some cases. So you're correct.
And I'll tell you this, as somebody that has gone through the whole training for just-in-time inventory and all that, and it was always the guy, because I'm supply chain, pointing out this is crap. Just-in-time inventory is great for Japan, where the Toyota is sitting right beside its second-tier suppliers, first-tier suppliers, or second sitting right beside theirs, the second-tier suppliers, so on. And it's like only a couple kilometers, maybe a little more between each one. So a truck arrives in 10 minutes. You order and it comes out, but somebody has to keep at least the raw material inventory. But you're right, U.S. logistics is, coming out of China, coming out of Japan, coming out, and that all goes on fuel, and that nobody has any inventory. So, if it breaks down anywhere, it breaks down everywhere, and poof, there's nothing there. There's not
Right.
enough inventory to carry you over to fix that problem.
Right. Which brings me to, so how do you get out of this? And I also have to say to those people who think Trump is playing 5D chess and not five dementia chess, who think this is all going to be brilliant, you cannot just ignore the suffering that's already happened. Right, the blowing up of the girls' school, the I don't know how many hundreds of thousand people in Palestine actually died once you get the rubble, the death toll there, we may never know. And take the suffering here at home in the United States, where people can't afford to buy a home, people are, I think, I forget what it was, something like 14 million or 4 million, I don't remember the number, but an enormous number of millions of American households were going to have all their utilities cut off this winter because they can't pay. And we had a particularly brutal winter. New York City, we had 19 homeless people freeze to death during the cold because we've decided it's a violation of their human rights to force them into a shelter. It's the pain is already ongoing. So if you're going to tell me that this is some brilliant strategy, how exactly is it benefiting people? It's not. It is catastrophic. And we have to change the way we think. And I'm going to continue to bring up until it gets addressed. We've had the Epstein files for what, 6 weeks now? Or
Well, the very
do you remember?
limited, yeah.
I mean, so we have millions of pages of documents, and members of the Congress do have access to the names. Why has no grand jury been convened on anyone? Why is there no criminal investigation? Do you, this is our 250th anniversary. What do you think George Washington would think? That the American people are perfectly fine with having a bunch of satanic pedophiles in seats of power running our country.
I think
You know?
Washington and the founding fathers of the U.S. saw what it's happening now. They may have stayed loyal to the king. I mean, this is
I wouldn't go that far,
I
but
don't know, but I mean, this is so far from what they were envisioning that it's a whole different reality. I mean, honestly speaking, at this point,
well,
it's a whole different reality.
exactly. And I want to rub that in too, because I think it's our handle in a sense to reach people. I mentioned last time we talked the illiteracy in this country that only 30% of American high school seniors can read on a high school level. I just learned that they actually have changed the SAT tests, that they used to have entire paragraphs in the reading test where you have to
Right,
then
yeah.
say what's going on. Now they've reduced it to one sentence
See
so
Jack
that the
run?
children,
What's
right,
Jack doing?
whatever.
Jack's running.
Right. Exactly. So, and then they say, oh, we're doing fine. It's like the military saying we filled our quota. Well, you cut your quota by two-thirds and now you're filling it. Or you know, people are in shape. Well, you said instead of running a mile, can you run 10 feet? You know,
Uh,
right?
quite a few of them would probably have heart attacks right now after 10 feet.
Exactly. So, and but language is so crucial because you know, I presume, speaking more than one language, maybe several, I don't know.
Two and a half. My German's suffering these days.
Okay. All right. Well, we can practice that. I'm working on my German,
Cool.
but you know, I was in Sweden as an exchange student and I learned Swedish. I lived in the northern part and it was about, oh my goodness, never mind how many years ago now. But people there really didn't speak English and I asked that everyone speak Swedish to me. So I began thinking and dreaming and Swedish became my first language. But I didn't have the vocabulary that I had in English. And at a certain point, it dawned on me that the thoughts I was having were on a lower level
No, of course.
because your language is so much connected to your ability to think. And if you control the vocabulary of a population, if you limit their access to words that have heavy ideas associated with them, it's not only that they are illiterate, it's that you are depriving them of the ability to have profound thoughts.
Yeah, I think the book was called 1984 and a new new speak, because if you don't have a word for freedom, how do you describe freedom as a concept? Yeah, I mean, Orwell wasn't talking about the Soviet Union. His whole book was a warning to the Anglo world that this is where you're heading,
I think it
and
was
we're
actually
there.
a plan. I
Yeah.
think it was a blueprint.
You know, it was a great T-shirt I saw once. It was a picture, so I don't know where to buy one. Maybe I'll have to get it designed by or for order. So it was a Venn diagram with three circles, and in one circle was written 1984, Another circle's written Brave New World. Third circle's written Animal Farm. Should be four circles in Fahrenheit put in there, but the very middle's called, and they had written USA. And then yeah, and it's true. I mean, you look at it, my God, these people didn't have enough creative thought to encompass what's going on these days.
Right. So that's where you say, well, how is there a shortcut? Is there a way to access something profound among people who've been so beaten down and literally demoralized, right? They've lost their morals, not only their morale, but their morals. Can you reach them? And I think that Americans do still have an idea of our nation. They want our nation to be good. People have an idea of goodness. And that can inspire people. And we have people doing very heroic things physically, right? Firefighters or people see a threat. So, can we access this desire to do good and take that as a starting point to uplift people, to get people, in a sense, able of at least having, the sensation when you say it's on the tip of my tongue, it's on the tip. I don't have a word for that, but they have an idea. Can we get there? Because we have to awaken that goodness. The American people, our government, our Constitution gives the American people enormous power. We're not using it right now.
True.
But if we were to use it, then that's a formidable force. But of course, you want it to be used for the good. And the other question, to make it more specific, and why I bring up the region of Southwest Asia or the great projects, things with a mission where you say, we're going to build the biggest bridge in the world. We're going to build the largest tunnel in the world. We're going to have trains that go 800 miles per hour in a vacuum tunnel. We're going to build a new city in the middle of the desert in Nevada. So you give people something as a teaser to awaken their mind and give them a positive mission. And I think those kind of things would be capable of snapping people. They won't instantly undo the damage of a generation of illiteracy, but you can quickly change the morale of people.
Yeah, you could, but then you have to stop all the wars. You'd have to stop spending on 900 bases around the world. Or whatever, it's 800, I think, something like that. If you count in the Norwegians now, and the Finns and the Swedes, I mean, you'd have to actually, live within your means to a degree and step back from hegemony or attempt at hegemony.
Well, I think we'd have to really smash the CIA. I've been reading Fletcher Prouty's book on the JFK assassination, and I'm reading that after I read the Susan Butler book on FDR and Stalin, which turned out to be very fortuitous because Prouty begins actually before World War II ends. And he describes being on a flight in 1944 where the United States had embedded a bunch of hardcore Nazis with prisoners of war, whom they were bringing back to the United States, including a bunch of Nazi documents, because as you know very well, I'm sure Winston Churchill wanted to do a preemptive nuclear strike on the Soviet Union. He was planning that before VE Day, he was planning that. So Prouty then begins from that and describes how the Vietnam War was created starting 1945, September 3rd, 1945. We were starting already to lay the groundwork for the war in Vietnam. And he described all of the fake operations staged by the CIA using American military to pretend that there was this battle or that battle. I mean, literally so extreme that they had people acting stuff out, shooting blanks, pretending to die. It was amazing. It was actually kind of shocking to read this. And one of these incidents happened in 1985 and got covered in the New York Times on the second page in Spain, because they got a little carried away with their acting and someone figured it out. They carried out a mock they carried out an ex execution, quote unquote, of the rebels using blanks, and somehow someone figured out what was going on. So then they had to out them and claim that they took a little too much license. But knowing this, I suddenly said, oh, We don't have 900 military bases. These are CIA bases,
Well, there's CIA
right?
almost all these bases, at least some amount.
But I
So,
think to do
yeah.
these kind of crazy operations,
Yeah.
right? So why not get, we'd probably be a lot more secure. I had asked Doug McGregor what he thought about the military bases, how many we could close down. He said, you could close down all but about 100 of them immediately without any, security problems.
Yeah, it's as fake as that Bucha massacre where they had the journalists drive by, and in the rearview mirror you see one of the corpses sits up, starts lighting a cigarette. It's like, got it.
Right.
There's CIA all over the place. I mean, I've ran into them in Bosnia, places like that. And there are on military posts, absolutely. They're not supposed to be operating inside the U.S., but they are.
Right,
That's obvious
right.
enough.
No, I mean, here's another handle, which I was actually very unhappy at the time with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who wanted to bring impeachment proceedings against Biden for, not that Biden shouldn't have been impeached, but she was going after bribery and money. And I said, you know, you have Nord Stream sitting right there. You have whoever told Seymour Hersh what went on and the names of the people. You want to get all the traitors out in one fell swoop, then, and Congress was totally legitimate because there was a secret operation to blow up a pipeline and Congress wasn't informed. So you want to get rid of these people, go after Nord Stream.
Deanna, wait a minute. Nord Stream, we all know, was Skipper and Gilligan. They got lost. They just had some explosives they needed to get rid of, and it just happened that way. And Marianne and the movie star, they were down there diving for fish or whatever, just dropping explosives all over the place. We know that. That's what we were told, right? Well,
Right.
the
Yeah.
Ukrainian version of them, anyways.
Yes. And who knows what that guy was doing that they arrested in Italy a while back. I mean, that was also peculiar.
It's brought off on such a, I guess, I don't know what badly written James Bond movie script, or some people of course will eat it up no matter what, but it's presented, it's almost like an insult on purpose. We're going to make the most insane option there is and put it to you as that's the one you need to believe in.
Well, it is. And actually, that's the difference between Leo Strauss, who's University of Chicago, and Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister. Because the Goebbels approach was you repeat a lie often enough and you get people to believe it. What Strauss said is you have more power if they know it's a lie and they feel powerless to do anything about it because then they are terrified. And therefore, they tell you the big lies, and it's as if they're sticking their tongue at you and saying, I dare you to challenge this. And it has the effect to make people feel very little, very impotent, and give up. And that's why I'm saying this demoralization question, I think, is so, it's an emotional change that has to occur if we're going to survive, if the human race is going to survive. In the West, I've been racking my brain, and of course, this is why I decided to run for president because the question that I keep asking is, we have so many nations in the BRICS and the BRICS Plus, they're getting rid of the colonial system. Can they succeed if the United States doesn't change? Is there a world in which we survive that the United States just collapses from within without harming anyone else? And I came to the conclusion, maybe, but I don't think we should place all our eggs in that basket.
If the United States, well, first of all, let's say this. There's a reason what the FBI said. We don't see any criminal activity that we can prosecute in the Epstein files. And you're right, that's the big lie. It's obvious to everybody, but it's the they're giving you the finger.
Right.
Go ahead, do something. We don't care. We'll literally eat your children. Literally, we'll eat your
Right.
children. And what? Just pray it's not your child next. It's your somebody else's child. I mean that's. But you're right. That's the big lie. You're absolutely right there. There's the big lie. We don't see any criminal activity. I mean, they really don't see any criminal activity in eating people's children and sacrificing them and everything else, raping them. Oh, good Lord. Yeah, you know, when the Soviet Union collapsed, and there were some like 14, 15 armed conflicts all around those in the peripheries, in different areas. So it didn't just go away peacefully, like everybody's saying, far from it. But the core Russia remained, and Russia got the nuclear weapons because, by the way, Russia was the inheritor from the Soviet Union, took all the debt from every other republic, too. Nobody wants to remember that. So at least you had all the nuclear weapons under one umbrella. Now, if the U.S. goes, say, in five different pieces, like the Confederacy, some Union, something in Midwest, something West Coast, and you have nuclear weapons, nuclear submarines everywhere around there, who gets what? Or what just goes on the black market? I mean, that's a very dangerous concept right there.
Yeah, sure. I hope that the United States isn't going that way. That's not really my sense. I think Americans are very strongly driven to wish to be unified, but because of this, frankly, language problem, this illiteracy problem, they have a far hard time conceiving of the ideas that are enough above the stupid single issue, low level stuff to around which they can unify. Although I think opposition to the Iran war, that's a pretty big, that is by far the majority of the American people I have talked to. It might be 20%, it might even be 30% who support it. I called a lady, oh, I'm totally with Trump on the Iran. I said, really? But then by the end of the conversation, she changed. So she also wasn't that, it was, an inch deep, not that
Right.
committed.
Yeah, I've heard from people like, oh, you know, they're murdering Christians. Really? There's 600 plus Christian churches operating. Christians are on in parliament because they're guaranteed that by the Constitution. There's well over 1 million Christians. Where are they murdering Christians? Christian officers in the army. There are Jewish officers in the army. And the people I talk to are like, oh, really? Like, yeah, that's listening to Fox or CNN versus actually doing some research or talking to people from, you know, it's
Right.
it, world of difference. But do you think it'll lead to demonstrations? I mean, I know there's been one in California. I think it was San Francisco, but it's pretty small. I mean, would there be an anti-war movement like they used to be back in the 80s, even in the 90s?
There may, they're planning this fraudulent No Kings business has picked up a lot of legitimate organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace and they're planning a huge day of action on March 28th. I am frankly skeptical. The United States is supposed to change things through the electoral process.
Right.
And that brings us back to the Epstein question, because if the Congress will not do anything about this, then we're sort of screwed. And the elections, I think the CIA runs our elections. I saw very interesting things happen with my vote both times when I ran for US Senate, including when I ran against Schumer, my votes actually disappeared. The farther we got into the night, the more votes that came in, the fewer votes I had. So that was pretty amazing, including in my own
Okay.
county. Yeah, where election night, I had 5.8% of the vote, which is what the one poll that mentioned my name said that I had, which is very high for an independent candidate. So election night, I had 6,212 votes go to sleep. The next morning, I have 270 votes. And
Wow, yeah, that's new. That's that new math, that fangled new math working right there. Yeah.
right, exactly. And people thought it was dumb. They said, are you sure you don't, it's not just the percentage? And I said, well, no, I'm talking about votes, people who voted for me. So that's a pr I think it's part of the psychological warfare against people because they don't get to know that actually 70% of the American people oppose this war vehemently.
Right.
But then if you go in and rig the election and everyone seems to have voted for Lindsey Graham, they say, oh, well, maybe I'm the only one who feels this way. And it's not true at all.
Absolutely. You know, on different issues I've had, you'd start talking to people and I've heard a lot of things from different people on different issues. They'll go, oh, and I thought I was the only one like that. It's like, no, you're not. It's actually like the majority. And honestly, you know, me personally, I'm a constitutional monarchist. And you would be surprised how many of the Russian intelligentsia level office military officers and politicians are monarchists. Everybody's afraid to say that. You start talking like, wow, I believe in that too. And the reality is like, well, I think the majority of the population, at least in this spectrum, has the same leanings, but everybody's afraid to say it because it seems unpopular. But everybody, right. Russia has a different background politically than the U.S. for obvious reasons, geopolitical too. But that's the same effect, though. Everybody's afraid to say it. They all think the same thing, but they're afraid to say it.
Yeah, and then you can't, how do you have a debate? You know, where do you get a chance to get to the nub of the matter? Where do you get a chance to air your differences and find out actually you agree on certain points, but you disagree on others? That does also tremendous harm to the sense of unity. It didn't used to be the case that friendships would end and people would get divorced over who they supported politically. Why is that happening now?
I actually lost. Trump won because I supported Trump in that case. And yeah, I had people that I've known for decades. Brother of one of my close friends, her brother just stopped talking to me, period. And a lot of other people that stopped, either cut ties or like, geez, seriously? I mean, of all the things it could have done, is that? Yeah, they're it's like you've committed the ultimate sin.
Right. So, but again, so we are in this kind of funny. Do you remember the fun houses at the fair where the
Oh
mirrors were
yeah,
curved and the
of
floor
course.
was? Yeah. So the whole population, at least in the West, has been stuck into a fun house where nothing that you see is what it appears. And therefore, we have to encourage people to, in a sense, think yourself, like Socrates worked on doing, right? What do you know for sure is true? Maybe it's very basic things. Let's see, we need clean drinking water, electricity, very basic. Okay, let's make sure that we have an economy that's going to provide these basic needs. And then you get your feet on solid ground and you can begin to take on more, what is the nature of man? Is man an animal or is man something special? What's our relationship to the universe? That's an internal question. You know what I'm saying? It's not, you're
Right,
not going to
right.
get it through your senses. And speaking of that, I just have to say, and I know we have to wrap up soon, but I think Helen Keller should be a national American hero. I read
Well, I
her
mean, I know
autobiography.
who she is and everything that happened in her life, but.
What she did, and this also got me thinking about the question of language, because she was born fine and then got sick, and I think
Right.
she was about 1 and a half or so when she lost her sight and her hearing, and she was stuck, totally isolated,
Right.
until this incredible woman, Annie Sullivan, came to work with her. And Annie Sullivan did sort of an immersion approach. Once Helen got the idea of the type, writing the letters in the palm of her hand, Annie just scribbled letters for everything, everywhere Helen went, just like a little child would say, why? Or da, Annie was describing every single thing. So Helen not only totally mastered English and even wrote poetry in English. She had a concept of rhyme. She learned Latin, Greek, French,
Oh, wow. I didn't
and
know that.
she wrote an essay about her experience at the top of the Empire State Building and what she could quote unquote see. And it always makes me cry every time I read it, but it shows you the power of the human mind, that your mind is free. Your thoughts are, you can liberate yourself from almost any condition. And therefore, I think she's an incredible role model, very American. She was a descendant of Alexander Spotswood, who was one of the crucial people for breaking from the British Empire. And I think it would, in a way, give people hope. And you also say, well, what's your excuse, right?
That's a good point. In my personal experience, what I've learned in traveling different countries, Singapore is a prime example of this. most people wouldn't even give a damn about politics as long as they're guaranteed what? They come home from a good job or a job that covers that they can live with. They can change into normal clothing from their work clothing, eat a normal dinner, sit whichever program that's interesting to them, go to bed, and knowing that their children will live better than they do. But for that, you
Right.
have to have politicians that actually give a damn about the people and the country and not about their own pocketbooks or whatever psycho, like the Christian Zionist heretical ideas, because they're not really Christian ideas that they espouse, which have nothing to do with any country except, well, they need the end of the world. So nothing to do with any country, period. Even these
Right.
the Jews are there just as a machine to get there. If these are the people in power, then of course everybody, the system can't work. As long as the system works with the needs of the people, that's what the Singaporeans do. They govern a one-party government, but nobody complains because everybody there's their job is to take care of the people.
Right. Right. And
And
if you don't do that, then you lose your credibility and you're out.
exactly. And by the way, they hang their ministers for corruption. Quite literally, they hang their ministers
I
for corruption.
believe
It's a death penalty. They get paid like three or well, I don't know how much now, but back about 10 years ago when I was going to Singapore for a company I was working with, for Cameron, they were getting paid, I think $3 million was their salary for. Now,
you.
if you got more than that and you couldn't explain where it came from, documented it, that was corruption, and the penalty was death.
Wow.
That one minister went and hung himself, another one got hung. So yeah, they very quickly went on the righteous narrow path, because otherwise there's a rope waiting for them. But it works. I mean, you like it or not, but it works. They kept the government honest. They take care of the people. I mean, that's what you have to have. If the government's not serving the people, why the hell is there a government?
Of course, that's the point.
Yeah. We're not there for the government. The government's there for us. That has to
Exactly.
be. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think they remember that.
Well, so the people have to do their part as well.
Absolutely, absolutely, and you're right. Well, I hope something can be done, because otherwise, Europe's already heading for a massive crash. The U.S. will eventually get there too, if it doesn't do something.
It may happen anyway, even if we change this. I don't see how they're going to control the price of gasoline, and that can just bring everything to a halt very quickly.
They could look. Russia controls the price of gas. I'll tell you how. 2011. Russia, one of the biggest producers of gasoline in the world, the biggest producer of diesel for, I mean, like 70% of export diesel is produced in Russia globally. And Russia had gasoline lines, because Europe went up in price so much, all the Russian big companies started exporting all the gasoline they could, all the
Oh,
diesel
I
to
see.
Europe and other markets. And suddenly there's gasoline lines in Russia. Well, the government stepped in and said, that's it. A, we're putting a temporary price ceiling to keep you from hiking prices too high. And second of all, we just put an export limit. That's it. Russia right now has, they just removed the export limit on gasoline. The diesel one is supposed to go off after planting season, so to make sure there's enough for farmers, at normal prices. So there
Right.
is ways to do it, but that's because Putin doesn't give them about a. Give a damn about a donor owner class.
Right.
Would
Right.
Trump be able to do that?
No.
Yeah, that's the problem.
No.
So,
No.
as he said, we're making money off the oil, the price of oil. I mean, he's being honest.
Great.
Yeah, he had that. That was one of his tweets. So there's a lot of them to keep up with. But yeah, and who's paying for that? The American consumer.
Right. Yeah, so they have to make their voice heard.
Absolutely. People, well, maybe this will be the shock, either that or the draft, if they're crazy enough to do a ground war. But I think gasoline may be the shock to get people woken up.
Yeah, and if I not, I would never wish for this ever, but if more Americans come back in body bags, that would be another one. Hopefully, we don't find ourselves there.
Yeah. Oh,
We'll
yeah.
see.
If they do a ground, it's insane to do a ground war. But if they do it, I mean, I don't know. I think they may be desperate enough. I don't think they know what to do right now. So we'll
No.
see. I guess we'll have a lot to talk about in the future.
Yes.
Trump won't, somebody needs to tranquilize him for a few days, let everybody have a break.
Take his cell phone away or something.
Jeez. Somebody pointed this out to me. There may be actually somebody working with him now because his grammar has improved a lot on those messages. There used to be tons of mistakes, and all of a sudden there aren't. And the spelling and misspelled, I mean, mis quotes and everything else. It's still Trump, the same type of rhetoric. It sounds
Right.
the same, but the grammar's much more improved.
Maybe it's
So
AI
it could be. It could be.
correcting everything. Could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be.
Great. Now
Yes.
Trump's work using AI and still coming out insane.
Yep. Well, we clearly have a big job to do. And I should run. I'm supposed to be doing another interview
No,
here
no problem, no problem.
momentarily.
Good luck. We'll talk
Thank you.
again. Everybody, thank you. Thank you for joining the show. If you have any questions, put them in the comments. I'll make sure Dion has the number or on the number the link. Oh, and by the way, Christopher Halali, who I was interviewing before, says hi.
Oh, thanks.
Drop him a
Yes,
note.
hi. Yes.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Great.
Good luck.